mic. Why do I put up this fight? Why do I still write? Sometimes it's hard enough just dealing with real life. Sometimes I wanna jump on stage and just kill mics. And so these people want my level of skills like. But I'm still white. Sometimes I just hate life. Something ain't right. Hit the brake lights. Taste of the stage fright.
And welcome to the inaugural episode of Command Line. For those of you who were worried, yes, I found a way to work a reference to line or lineman into a show name. Now, if the name Command Line doesn't give it away, this is going to be a show devoted to programming specifically. We're not going to get in the big debate about whether this is a programming language or not and different things, but we're going to keep the topics kind of broad and really try to focus on things that are going to lend themselves well to the audio format. I don't know that anybody else has ever done a talk show of any sort on programming, but hey, we're going to give it a shot. It's always an interesting thing to try to do, to learn something from audio so you can burn it to a CD or listen to it over your computer or something like that. It's just a different way of learning, and for those of you who are auditory learners, it's really a nice change of pace. I know that I really enjoy finding some lectures and things online, burning them to CD, and then listening to them in my truck on the way to work and whatnot. Well, the way this show got started, the idea for it originally came from a discussion on techdiscussions.com between Validus and myself. Somewhere along the line, he made a comment about how he wished he could have his hardcore coding show that he always wanted to listen to, and I suggested, well, hey, why don't we make one? Well, we didn't really have much to say after that about it, but then as time went on, what's happened is that we've really gotten an influx of really highly qualified computer science specialists, where for a while there, if you just took programming and computer science just on their own, I probably would have put myself in the top three experts on it on the site. Well, now I'm nowhere close to that, which is really an awesome thing, where now there are people on the site that really specialize in different topics and have a lot to offer in that area. Well, the first segment we're going to do here is going to be by Telemachus, who has been on the site for a while, and if you haven't seen it, on Lyman.net he's publishing a series of 8 articles that deal with artificial intelligence. It's really a different kind of perspective on it, because it deals with it from a philosophical and even a theological stance. And where this series of articles actually came from was from his honors level thesis for his bachelor's degree. So a lot of good stuff in there, and a few people have been reading it. I'm hoping we get a few more readers there to give him a little more attention, because he's really written some good stuff. Now, what he's going to discuss here is something that, for those of you who, like me, are not exactly Unix experts, Linux experts, Starnix experts, whatever you want to call it, those of us who just kind of dabble in it, and some people will say that, well, you know, work with it long enough, you're going to get it. Well, I've been dabbling with Linux for, not 10 years yet, but I guess about 8 years. I still don't feel like I have a clue what I'm doing in it. But after listening to this segment, I really feel like I could at least get a start with shell scripts here. So without further ado, here's Telemachus.
What's up, everybody? This is Charlie, better known as Telemachus from Lineman.net and TechDiscussions.com. I know a lot of you out there are really interested in using Linux and learning what you can do with it. You've probably installed one of the many free versions of Linux on a secondary partition or old hard drive, or maybe you've just played around with a bootable live CD like Nopix. You've been trying out some of the great open source applications that come bundled with most distributions like OpenOffice and the GIMP. You're exploring the X-Window system and trying out either KDE, GNOME, or whatever desktop environment you prefer. And hopefully you're learning everything you can about the Unix file system and all the shell commands and utilities. In any case, you've probably gotten to the point where you are reasonably comfortable with using Linux for things like browsing the web and reading email, and you're eager to learn about some of the more advanced features of this powerful operating system. In this segment, I'll present an introduction to writing shell scripts. Basically, a shell script is simply a series of shell commands stored in a text file that can be executed by a Unix-based system such as Linux, BSD, or Mac OS X. If you have any experience using DOS or Windows batch files, you'll recognize that this is a similar concept. Shell scripts are used for storing commonly used sequences of commands and can range from simple one-liners to full-blown programs, complete with user interaction, test cases, and variables. Scripts are used for things like administration issues, for archiving and cleaning up files, and for tweaking the operating system. You can write scripts for any of the Unix shells, but here I will focus on Bash, or the Born Again shell. The only things you need to write your own shell scripts are any version of Linux and any text editor. For now, I'll assume that you've already got Linux installed and running on your system. As far as text editors are concerned, many people swear by Vi or Emacs, but personally I prefer Pico, mainly because it's very easy to learn and use. If Pico did not come with your Linux distribution, you can download a free clone called Nano from nano-editor.org. So let's get started. If you'd like to follow along, go ahead and open up a terminal window now. It's customary to use a Hello World type example when introducing a new programming language, but I'll use something slightly more interesting for our first shell script. We'll take the Hello World theme a bit further by prompting the user for their name and then displaying a personalized greeting. First thing we'll do is open up a new file with the text editor. If you're doing it my way, at the console you'll type Pico or Nano, followed by the file name, which will be hello.sh. The .sh extension is not really necessary. The script will work just fine without it, but it helps keep track of which files are scripts. Alright, now we're ready to write a script. The first thing we'll need to do is indicate which shell the script is meant for, that is, which executable program will interpret the script. This is especially necessary when writing C shell or Corn shell scripts, but we'll include it in our bash script as well. So in the first line we'll type ../bin/bash. This simply tells the shell that this file is a born script. On the second line, we'll prompt the user for his or her first name. Type echo, quote, enter your name, end quote. Next, we'll take the input from the user and store it as a variable called name. Type read followed by name. Now we can complete the script by typing echo, quote, hello, $name, end quote. The dollar sign is simply used to tell the shell interpreting the script to replace that token sequence with the value of the named variable. And that's it. Save the file as hello.sh, which you can do with the Ctrl-X command in Pico or Nano. Then, once we're back at the shell prompt, we'll need to make our file into an executable in order to run the script. For this, you'll want to change the file permissions. The easiest way to accomplish that is to type chmod+x hello.sh at the terminal. This will make our file executable by any user of the system. Now we can run our script for the first time. Type /hello.sh to execute that file in the current directory and press enter. With any luck, you should be prompted to enter your name and then greeted by your script. Now that you've successfully created your first shell script and seen how easy it is, I'm sure you want to tackle something a little more interesting and useful. So for my second example, I will show you how to write a script you can use to back up your most important files. This script will introduce the concepts of environmental variables, testing, and dealing with the file system. First, we will initialize our variables. Next, we will make sure that the backup directory exists and create it if it does not. Finally, we will perform the backup and then check to see that everything worked properly. Okay, now we can open up a new file with our text editor. So I'll type pico backup.sh at the shell prompt. Just as in our previous script, we'll type in /bin/bash as our first line to indicate that this is a bash script. Next, we'll set up the three variables we need to run the script, which are the source directory we will make the backup of, the target directory where the backup will be created, and the file name of the backup archive itself. The source directory will be the home directory of the current user. We could prompt the user to input this, but a simpler way would be to use the environmental variable that returns the full path name of your home directory. Environmental variables are nothing more than predefined values initialized by the setup files of each shell, and contain information like username and terminal type. So, on our second line, we will set the variable for our source directory to be the home directory of the current user by typing source equals quote $home end quote. Make sure that wherever you use it here, home is in all caps because the shell is case sensitive. Next, we will initialize the target directory by typing target equals quote $home/backup/end quote on the third line. Don't worry if this directory doesn't exist in your home directory yet, because we'll take care of that in a minute. I added a trailing slash at the end of backup to make things go smoothly when we combine these variables later on. Finally, we will set up our archive variable. This is where we create the name for the backup file itself. I decided to make it be the name of the archive directory and the date the backup was created. So our fourth line will be archive equals quote home hyphen dollar sign open parentheses date space plus percent sign capital Y percent sign lowercase m percent sign lowercase d close parentheses dot tgz end quote. This uses the date utility in the year month day format and gives dot tgz as the extension for the file name to help us remember that this is a compressed archive. Now on to the main part of our script. The first thing we'll do is make sure that the target directory exists. We'll use an if statement to test for that. So on our next line we will type if space open square bracket space hyphen e space dollar sign target space close square bracket. This is a test expression which returns as true if the directory contained in the value of our variable target exists. There are many other test expressions besides the hyphen e one which you might find very useful. Anyway, if the directory exists, we'll just tell the user that that's the case. On the next line, simply type then, and on the one after that, type echo, quote, backup directory exists, end quote. But if the directory does not exist, such as the first time we run the script, we'll have to create it. So on the next line, type else, followed by echo, quote, backup directory does not exist, comma, creating, end quote, on the next line. We will use the make directory utility to, guess what, make the directory. So on this line, we'll type mkdir dollar sign target. We will then close out this if statement by typing fi on the next line. Fi is just if backwards and works just like endif does in other languages. Okay, now we're ready to make the backup. We'll use the tar utility with the create, gzip, and file options and use a combination of the target and archive variables as the tar file and the source variable as the files to be archived. So we'll type tar space CZF space dollar sign target dollar sign archive space dollar sign source. The combination of dollar sign target and dollar sign archive results in the full path and file name for our backup file, and this is why we needed to include the trailing slash when we initialized our variables. This line should create the tarball archive of our home directory, but we want to make sure that everything worked according to plan, so we will test to check that the archive file was created. We will make a new if statement to test if the backup file exists in a similar fashion to the way we tested for the backup directory earlier. Type if space open square bracket space hyphen e space dollar sign target dollar sign archive space close square bracket followed by then on the next line and echo quote backup completed successfully on the one after that. This is what will hopefully be executed each time we run the script, but just in case something goes wrong, we will want to add else on the next line and echo, quote, backup failed, end quote, on the next. And of course, don't forget to close out the if statement with fi on the last line. And with that, our second script is completed. Save it as backup.sh with control X if you're using Pico or Nano. Then back at the shell prompt, enter changemod plus x backup.sh to make the script an executable file. And finally, try running the script by typing /backup.sh and hitting return. Keep your fingers crossed, and if you enter the script correctly, you should see it executing with perhaps a message or two from the tar utility, and then exit properly. You can confirm that it worked by listing the files in your home directory with the ls command and seeing that the backup directory was created. Then switch to that directory with cd backup and hit ls again to see the archive file listed with the proper date and the file name. And if you'd like to uncompress the archive and see the files contained therein, enter tar with the XZF options, followed by the name of the backup file. This will extract all of the files in the archive and dump them into your current directory. Run ls again to see the uncompressed archival copy of your home directory listed in the backup directory. Alright, I hope I've been able to get you interested in writing shell scripts and given you a taste of what's possible. Now these are both really simple examples of what you can do with shell scripts. If you'd like to learn more, just do a Google search for shell scripts and check out some of the thousands of references available online. Or you could always pick up a book off of Amazon or from your local bookstore. One book you might like is called Wicked Cool Shell Scripts, which is published by No Starch Press. Well, that just about does it for my first segment on this first episode of Command Line. I'm not entirely sure what I'll cover in the next episode, maybe something on C programming and Linux using GCC, maybe Java applets or dynamic web pages, or maybe even something a bit more abstract like comparing data structures or algorithms. who knows? If there's a topic you'd like to see covered, let us know and we'll see what we can put together. Again, my name is Telemachus. I hope you liked my segment on shell scripts. And now, let's throw it back to Lineman.
Thanks, Telemachus, and we'll be right back after this. Hi, this is Lineman speaking on behalf of HowDoIHack.com and ThePosen.org. If you're not familiar with HowDoIHack.com, it's a network of hackers from all around the world that just are there to offer help 24/7 to anybody just trying to learn how to hack. Now, what I'm going to do is answer an email, and this is an email that's representative of a lot of the mail that I get. And a lot of that the guys at HowDoIHack.com get. So let me read this, and then we'll do our best to answer it. The question is, how do I hack the internet? And this is from Robert in San Francisco. Well, Robert, it'd be really tough to really go into that because that's a pretty broad question. But let me give you a tip that'll get you started. Now, if you'll open up Internet Explorer and just go ahead and open up whatever web page you want. Let's see, let me load one up here. Okay, now, once your web page is loaded, what you need to do is go up to View, click on that, and then go down to Source, click on that. And now if you look, you can see the code that makes this page. So, again, I can't go into all the details of how to hack the internet, but this will give you a good start. Now, if you've been into this hacking stuff for a while, you may be using Mozilla by now. Well, right now I'm playing with Firefox, and let me see. I'll open up a web page here for that. Okay, now it's going to be a little more complicated with this one. It's not as easy to hack the internet with this, but it's you're going to be able to do a lot more. So you want to go up to the top, click on View again, and now you're going to scroll down. But instead of Source, you're going to go to Page Source. Well, you click that, and voila, it pops up. You've got all the code there, and this time it's got everything highlighted and the colors are there that'll really help you read the code a little better. Well, hopefully, Robert, that answered your question, but if you have any more trouble or you need any more help, be sure to stop by and visit HowDoIHack.com. Somebody's there all the time. You can talk to them and they should be able to help you out. On behalf of HowDoIHack.com and ThePosen.org, this is Lineman saying, search the f***ing web, noob. And welcome back. As much as I hate to do this and to recycle old material, there's a segment from Line Interference Episode 3 that whole episode dealt with programming, actually, so a lot of it kind of inspired this show. Well, if there was a segment on this one that I did where I talked about, just some different things. But I want to play this for a couple reasons. I mean, first of all, it's a good segment because it talks about compilers and assemblers and third-generation languages and explains some of that. But the main reason why is that this segment has been referenced all over the internet for my explanation of what programming language you should start out with. So I'm going to play that for you, and I promise not to do this much in the future, but enjoy. Now, the thing I wanted to discuss and to kind of end this on in the topic of programming is a question that you go to any site that has any sort of forum relating to programming, you're going to see this question over and over and over again. So I'm going to do my best here to give a definitive answer. The question is, what programming language should I begin with? I've seen quite a few answers to this, and there's a lot of discussion, and naturally, a flame war ensues. Well, I've kind of got the forum here, so to speak, and I'm going to give you my 2 cents on it. Feel free to disagree. Well, if you're wanting to write this down, why don't you run and get a piece of paper so I can explain to you which programming language you should begin with. You ready? It doesn't matter. for goodness sakes, I'm going to scream that at the top of my lungs every time I see this huge debate over what programming language should I begin with. It doesn't matter! You believe me? Well, let me try to explain it. Now, first of all, let's try to discuss how these programming languages work, how they interact with the computer, and all this. And it kind of comes down to compilers and machine language, assemblers and assembly language, and then third generation programs, programming languages. What are all these things? Well, first of all, the compiler and machine language, this has to do with the ones and zeros language that you're always hearing about, binary code. Anytime you run an executable file, you know, like in Windows, it's going to end in .exe or .com, .com. Anytime you run one of these, they're written in machine language. These are very low-level things, but once they've been compiled, that's what you've got. So where do you end up with this stuff? Well, this stuff, when you have something written in machine language, it's going to run very fast. Faster than anything else, and the code is going to be shorter. The thing is, it's really, really complicated to write. Most people can't write anything in machine language. Now, machine language varies, if you're interested in this, it varies a little bit from machine to machine. So when you end up with operating systems to be run on a different sort of architecture, sometimes you need to have different sorts of packages available, because the machine language is going to vary with different machines. Like, for example, my laptop here has a machine language. If I have a router, it's going to have a machine language of its own. If I go to a Coke machine, it's going to have its own machine language. Just all sorts of different machines have different machine languages, but it all comes down to ones and zeros. Well, to make any sort of operating system, you're going to have a certain amount of things that are written in machine language. I mean, this is all the machine knows, and you have to have that before it's going to understand anything else. So this is the goal in the end. Once you compile something, machine language, executable. Now, the assembler and assembly language, there's a lot of confusion about this. I'm going to try and give you the basics on it. A lot of times people will say assembler when they mean compiler and vice versa, because these are terms that, in most cases, can be used interchangeably. Even though it's not correct, most people are going to understand what you're talking about when you say it and know what you really mean. Well, assembly language is kind of in between your third generation languages and machine language. It's getting close to machine language, but it's not quite there. It's going to have syntax and structure, and going to have certain things that are similar to English language or whatever, but it's not going to be as easy to read as your third generation languages are. So why do they use it? Well, like I said, it's kind of an intermediate step. It's in between machine language and third generation languages. You can use this to write things that are going to actually run a little bit faster. The code's going to be a little bit shorter than in other languages, other high-level languages, but it's not going to be as difficult to write as machine language. Okay, well, then you've got third-generation languages. Now, what in the world are these? Well, there are things such as BASIC, C, C++, Pascal. These are just your basic, run-of-the-mill programming languages that you're going to hear about. Now, there are some other things that you may be wondering about, such as Java and Perl and some of these. Well, these are interpreter languages, and these are, I'm not going to go into that. If you get this stuff, then these are the basics of what I'm talking about here. Now, here's what I'm getting at on these different levels of languages. This part of why it doesn't matter what programming language you learn in, if you're using any of these third generation languages, there are going to be different things that they help you out with. For example, BASIC is going to be really easy to understand for somebody that's just starting out. They can look at the code and, okay, I can kind of follow what's happening. With C or C++, either one, you're going to have a lot more things available, a lot more pre-made commands and procedures and functions and that sort of thing that are available to you. But when it comes down to it, if you're making some sort of executable code, you're just going to be compiling it into machine language anyway. So it's really not as important as people make it. You shouldn't place that much importance on what programming language you learn. If you end up going on to get a degree in computer science, you're going to end up learning a ton anyway. And so whatever you start out with certainly isn't going to hurt you. Now, there's another reason that I'm trying to argue that it doesn't matter what programming language you start with. Now, let me give you the analogy here. Let's say, well, for example, my wife and I are expecting a baby here pretty soon. Well, we, of course, want our child to be a good speaker and have a command of language, but are we going to argue about what language our child starts with? I mean, for example, if we want our child to someday learn Latin and Spanish and French and some different languages, does it matter what we start them out with? Well, are there some languages, like for example, if I want my child to learn Japanese someday, is there a language we could start out with that maybe would help? Well, sure, there's probably a language that it's easier to go from one to another with. On the other hand, we're going to use what's available to us. What's going to be natural for us? Well, the language we already know, the language that we have the resources to use, and so you start out. I mean, in our case, we're going to start out teaching our kid English. But nobody starts out trying to figure out, well, what language do I teach my kid? What do we want them to speak? Well, they're going to start out with whatever's natural for them. So it's really not as big a deal as people make. I mean, just like human language is just a way to communicate. I mean, that's the whole point of it, to express ideas with different people. That's what's happening with computers, except these are the ways that people interact with computers and computers interact with each other. That's the whole point of programming and programming languages. So, doesn't really matter. Feel free to disagree with me, but I think I argue a decent case for that. And with that, I'm afraid we're coming to a close on our first episode of Command Line. I want to thank you for listening. If you have any input on it, be sure to contact us at either lineman.net, you can post there, or you can join up at techdiscussions.com and you can start a new thread there and we can talk about all this. So thanks again for listening, and I'll see you at the forums.